ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। I sincerely welcome everyone to Sri Radha Gopinath Temple. On behalf of our beloved founder Acharya, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, we welcome you and thank you for coming. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Suta Goswami gives narration of Arjuna's return to Hastinapur, being greeted by Maharaj Yudhisthira, was then the king of all the world. Yudhisthira Maharaj recognized most inauspicious omens manifesting in all directions. It was a heartbreaking scene when he saw his beloved younger brother Arjuna, bereft of luster, strength, or any happiness whatsoever. Yudhisthira Maharaj inquired in various ways as to why Arjuna was lamenting so bitterly. He had just gone to Dwarka to visit with Krishna, the very, very Lord of his life. Arjuna revealed his heart that Krishna, by his own sweet will, appeared within this world, and by his own sweet will, he left us, returning to his eternal abode. Arjuna was expressing how his heart was utterly broken in separation from Krishna, and how he had lost his strength and his composure. When Krishna was with me, I can overcome all obstacles. Even that great ocean in the form of the Kuru dynasty, we were able to cross over. Even such great heroes as Bhishma, Drona, and Karna, we were able to defeat. And previous to that, by the power of Krishna, I was able to do what no other man in this world could do, to win Draupadi's hand in marriage. By the grace of Krishna, I defeated Indra in battle and got great benedictions from Maya Danava for doing so. By the grace of Krishna, Lord Shiva disguised himself to fight with me, and I fought such a battle with him. He was so impressed. The destroyer of all creation could not defeat me, and he gave me blessings and weapons. But now that Krishna has gone, a band of infidel cowherd men defeated me as I was trying to protect Krishna's queens. This is the same Gandiba bow, same chariot. I am the same Arjuna, but I have no more potencies. When Krishna left, he took them all with him. Arjuna was in a craze of lamentation. And then he recited this beautiful verse. Now I am attracted to those instructions imparted to me by the personality of Godhead, Govinda, because they are impregnated with instructions for relieving the burning heart in all circumstances of time and space. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Herein, Arjuna refers to the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, which was imparted to him by the Lord on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. The Lord left behind him the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, not for the benefit of Arjuna alone, but also for all time and in all lands. The Bhagavad Gita, being spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the essence of all Vedic wisdom. It is nicely presented by the Lord Himself for all who have very little time to go through the vast Vedic literatures like the Upanishads, Puranas, and Vedanta Sutras. It is put within the study of the great historical epic Mahabharata, which was especially prepared for the less intelligent class, namely the women, the laborers, and those who are worthless descendants of the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and higher sections of the Vaishyas. The problem which arose in the heart of Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra was solved by the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. Again, after the departure of the Lord from the vision of earthly people, when Arjuna was face to face with being vanquished in his acquired power and prominence, he wanted again to remember the great teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, just to teach all concerned that the Bhagavad Gita can be consulted in all critical times, not only for solace from all kinds of mental agonies, but also for the way out of material entanglements, which may embarrass one in some critical hour. The merciful Lord left behind him the great teachings of the Bhagavad Gita so that one could take the instructions of the Lord even when he is not visible to the material eyesight. Material senses cannot have any estimation of the Supreme Lord, but by his inconceivable power, the Lord can incarnate himself to the sense perception of the conditioned souls in a suitable manner through the agency of matter, which is also another form of the Lord's manifested energy. Thus, the Bhagavad Gita, or any authentic scriptural sound representation of the Lord, is also the incarnation of the Lord. There is no difference between sound representation of the Lord and the Lord Himself. One can derive the same benefit from the Bhagavad Gita as Arjuna did in the personal presence of the Lord. Bhagavad Gita, which is declared here to be the essence of all the Vedic literatures. sometimes called Gitopanishad. Krishna, being all merciful, knowing that common people in this world will not have the time or the intellectual capacity to study all the Upanishads, all the Puranas, the Vedas, the Vedanta Sutra, even the whole of the Mahabharata. Therefore, he condensed the message that is the essence of all knowledge in this simple dialogue that he had within Kurukshetra battlefield with Arjuna. Therefore, in all sampradayas, the greatest of the acharyas have propagated Bhagavad Gita and written their authorized commentaries. Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, in the Advaita school, Shankaracharya, Sridhar Swami. They gave such preeminent importance to the Gita. Why? Because everything is there. The setting of Gita is important to understand. In Mahabharata, we find the Maharaj Shantanu, a great king. He was married to Ganga Devi. Many children were born, but only one survived, Bhishma, who was an expansion of one of the greatest of the Vasus. Bhishma was the very, very personification of all good qualities. He was trained in all the various sciences by the topmost authorities. And he was completely faithful and respectful to his superiors. This is an extraordinary quality. Usually when one gets opulences, one becomes proud. But there was no trace of such false pride in Bhishma. He was a great scholar. He was a great warrior. He was a great statesman. But still, so respectful to his elders. His father had lost his wife. Ganga had left for the heavenly worlds. His father fell in love with the daughter of Dasaraj, a fisherman whose name was Satyavati. But the father refused to marry his daughter to a king without the condition that there would be an unconditional, absolute guarantee that only the child of my daughter will be the undisputed king of the world. And this is not possible because Bhishma is your eldest son. When Bhishma heard about this, not from his father, but from his father's chariot driver, Bhishma was so much in a mood of serving his father, he went to the fisherman and made a vow that he would never sit on the throne. He said, well, even if you don't sit on the throne, then your children will have a right over my grandchildren. So Bhishma vowed, I will never marry. and never have children. Santanu married Satyavati. They had two children. Meanwhile, Bhishma had to do the work of carrying on the kingdom after Santanu left. The children was Chitrangada and Vichitravirya. Chitrangana was supposed to be the next king, but he was opposed by a Gandharva with the same name, and they fought till death. Chitrangada was killed. So Vichitravirya was to be the king, but he wasn't a very powerful person. So Bhishma brought two wives for him to marry, Ambika and Ambalika. But before any children came, Vichitravirya died. So now who's going to take the throne? Shantanu is gone. So Bhishma was not allowed to be the king, he was not allowed to marry, but he had to rule the state unofficially and informally until a child who was a descendant of Kuru. So Satyavati had an idea that she had an eldest son and he could beget children through the wives of Vichitravirya. And that son was Mahamuni Vyasadeva. Through Ambika, Dhritarashtra was born. Through Ambalika, Pandu was born. And through a maidservant of the queen's, Bidura took birth. Dhritarashtra was blind. Because of this handicap, it was decided that he was not suited to be the king. So the kingdom was given to Pandu when he grew old enough to accept it. Pandu accepted two wives, Kunti and Madri, and had five children. From Kunti was born Yudhisthira, Bhima, Arjuna. And from Madri, Nakul and Sahadev. And they are known as the five Pandavas. Meanwhile, Dhritarashtra, through his wife Gandhari, had 100 sons. I'm not going to name all of them. I don't know the name of all of them. And I don't care to know their names. But Duryodhana, who was an Amsa of Kali, was born as the eldest. Now, it was Bhishma and the elders' decision that Dhritarashtra, who had no right to be the king, should temporarily sit on the throne Pandu died. Pandu died when his five sons were small children. So then it was decided that Dhritarashtra should sit on the throne up until the point that Yudhisthira Maharaj, who was the rightful heir of the throne of the Kuru dynasty, was old enough to accept it. During that time, it was one family. The Pandavas and the Kurus, they went to school together at the ashram of Dronacharya. They learned the sciences, the arts, the Vedas together. But as time passed, Duryodhana became more and more envious. Because the Pandavas, especially Yudhisthira and Bhima, were superior to him in practically every way. And this was unbearable to him. He had passionate greed to usurp the kingdom from its rightful heir. And his father, Dhritarashtra, was not only physically blind, but due to the association of a wicked and cruel-hearted son, he became spiritually and morally blind as well. Duryodhana plotted to murder the Pandavas, to get them out of the way of his life forever. And had the blessings and sanctions of his father. Dhritarashtra built a beautiful house in a place called Varanataka and invited the Pandavas to go there to have a pleasurable time. But it was made out of a flammable material, and there was a plot to light it on fire when they were sleeping and kill them. Horrible death. Burn them to death. Burn them alive. But the younger brother of Dhritarashtra, Vidura, he was very, very intelligent. He could understand exactly what the plan was. And it was by the grace of Vidura that he warned the Pandavas and made a whole strategy to free them. They escaped. And they went into hiding. And while they were hiding was the Swayamvara for Draupadi, the daughter of King Drupada. And at that time, by the grace of Krishna, Arjuna came in disguise and he pierced the eye of a fish. It was on the ceiling with a rotating wheel in front of it, and he couldn't look. He had to look through a bowl of water on the floor. Thus he married Draupadi and told his mother Kunti that I have brought something very nice to show you. And she said, share whatever it is, share it with your brothers. The power of the word of a chaste woman. So Arjuna shared, and Draupadi became the wife of all five Pandavas. By the power of the influence of Bhishma, Drona, Vidura, and others, Dhritarashtra really had no choice. He was forced to give Yudhisthira a portion of the kingdom. Specifically, Indraprastha. And Yudhisthira just flourished with his brothers. They practically conquered the whole world. He performed the Rajasuya Yajna. And worship Krishna as the supreme being to glorify him for all time to come. Maya Dhanava, obliged to Arjuna for his favors, built a magnificent palace for Krishna, for Yudhisthira in Indraprastha. But seeing the success of Yudhisthira Maharaj, who was always respectful, humble, and caring toward every living being, Duryodhana became intolerably burnt by the fire of envy. And the more wonderful, attractive qualities Yudhisthira had, the more that disturbed Duryodhana. Yudhisthira Maharaj treated every one of his citizens, down to the grass, the insects, the reptiles, the trees, the animals, and all classes of human beings, he treated them like a father loves a son or a daughter. He respected everyone. He protected the rights of all. He meted out justice to the wicked. He was a perfect leader. Everyone loved him. But Duryodhana could not tolerate seeing the love and affection that everyone had for Yudhisthira, because he felt it should come to him. He had no power to attract the love and affection of the world. So his idea was, destroy Yudhisthira and usurp it from him. So they arranged this gambling match, which was fixed by the cheating Shakuni. And the Pandavas lost all their wealth. They even lost Draupadi and wicked Duryodhana, along with Karna and Dushasana. They defiled the morality of Draupadi. At least that was their attempt, by stripping her naked like a slave woman. But she cried out to Krishna and he saved her with unlimited cloth. Bhima and the Pandavas, when they saw the disrespect that was shown to Draupadi, they were seething with anger. But Yudhisthira held them down. And then they were banished to the forest for 12 years. And after 12 years, they had to be banished incognito for another year, making a 13th year. And after 12 years of exile, in that last year, if anyone detected who they were, they would have to go another 12 years. So the Pandavas spent 12 years in a forest. The 13th year, they had to disguise themselves as cooks and eunuchs and keepers of horses and cows. And at the end of the 13th year, they came back and asked Dhritarashtra, now give us the rightful position we deserve. But he would not. He wanted Duryodhana to rule over everything. So the Pandavas, they were so gracious. They said, we're Kshatriyas, we have to have something. Just give us 5 villages and we'll be satisfied. Just to rule over 5 villages. And Duryodhana, you could rule over the rest of the world and there'll be no conflict. Duryodhana, his response, I will not give you the amount of land that you could drive the head of a needle into. Even Krishna tried to somehow or other mediate and create a settlement for peace. But Dhritarashtra, he became demoniac due to association with a demon. Refused to even cooperate with Krishna. They rejected flat out Krishna's all-merciful proposals. It's very difficult. At this point, there was no alternative. There would have to be a war. And both sides were recruiting help. Duryodhana, who was the reigning king, attracted 11 Akshohini divisions of soldiers, and Yudhisthira only 7. And then Krishna proclaimed to Duryodhana and Arjuna that I will not fight in this battle. I will not lift a weapon. On one side, I will give an Akshohini division of my soldiers from the Yadu dynasty. And on the other side, I will alone participate, but I will not fight. Now, Duryodhana, you can take the choice. Duryodhana thought of everything in a materialistic way. And Arjuna was thinking in a very spiritual way. So Krishna satisfied both of them. Duryodhana materially thought, Krishna, if you're not going to fight, you're useless. But your army's very strong. Give me your army. You could be with Arjuna. And Arjuna was very happy. If Krishna's on our side, we are sure of victory. So all the plans were made that the battle would be in Kurukshetra. The first verse of Sri Bhagavad Gita sets the scene. Dhritarashtra is in Hastinapur. He's blind. He cannot see. He's asking Sanjay, who was a disciple of Vedavyas, what's happening? Sanjay was given divine vision by Vedavyas. So even from a distance away, he could see everything taking place on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and he could report it to Dhritarashtra. Thus, Gita begins. Dhritarashtra uvacha. Everyone together. Dharmakshetre kurukshetre samaveda yayuchava mama ka pandavas chaiva kim akurvati sanjaya. Having assembled on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, which is the field of Dharma, tell me what is taking place between my sons and the sons of Pandu. Now, Dhritarashtra began with the word Dharmakshetre Kurukshetre. This was on his mind. He was worried. Because Dharmakshetra, or Kurukshetra, has been known since time immemorial as a place of pious religious activities. The great forefather, Kuru, performed grand sacrifices for the pleasure of the Lord in that field. And since that time, pious activities and devotional service have been taking place there. The fact that this battle is happening in a place of Dharma is favorable to Yudhisthira, because he is Dharmaraj. And because your Duryodhana was the very personification of adharma, it was an unfavorable environment for him. Sanjay began to explain. Duryodhana called for Drona and asked, tell me, who's assembled? Who's where? And he was giving a whole description of the principal characters in the lineup of both the armies. Then Grandfather Bhishma, who was the commander-in-chief of the Kurus. And there was Drona and so many powerful people. They started blowing their conch shells. It was tumultuous.
just to show their might, they blew their conch shells.
But then Arjun, Yudhisthira, Bhima, Nakula, Sahadev, they began to blow their conch shells. And it was so tumultuous, it made the Kuru's conch shell sound very childlike.
It wreaked havoc in their hearts.
It was at that point that Partha, the son of Prita, turned to Parthasarathi, his chariot driver, and requested, "Please bring my chariot between the two armies." Krishna accepted the command of his devotee Arjuna and led the four white horses to the center of the battlefield and turned to Arjuna and said, "Just see who has assembled before us to fight." Arjuna was horrified at what he was seeing. Arjuna knew who was on both sides, more or less, even beforehand. But when Krishna said, "Just see," it gave him another perspective. A perspective that he really wasn't very conscious of previously. Krishna gave him the vision to see through the eyes of a loving relative and friend and well-wisher of everyone. Previously, he was ascendable down that battlefield in the mood of a kshatriya, ready to fight for justice and liberty. For dharma. But when Krishna said, "Just see who has assembled," Arjuna started seeing from the point of view of a cousin brother and a grandson and a disciple of a teacher. It was unbearable. He was bewildered. Krishna, Duryodhana might be a demon and all of that, but he's my brother. He's my cousin brother. Why should we fight to kill him? And look who's leading his army, Bhishma, who I love as a grandsire, who's nourished and protected me from my childhood in the absence of my father. And Drona, everything I know about fighting, I learned from him. How can I use the very teachings that he taught me to destroy him? Is that gratitude? No, this is not possible. If we kill all these millions and millions of men, then what will happen? All their wives will become widows. And then if they're not protected, unscrupulous men will take advantage of them, exploit them. There will be unwanted population, Varna Sankar. And then all the religious principles will be neglected and the whole world will fall into a state of chaos. And these are my loving relatives. Even if I win, how could I enjoy the kingdom if it is at the expense of the blood and the lives of those who I honor and love? I cannot fight this war. But at the same time, he understood that his duty was to fight. He was bewildered. He was perplexed. His Gandiva bow fell from his hands in anguish, tears, paleness, dry mouth, trembling limbs. He sat back in a stupor, looking around,
while everybody else was aggressively anxious for the war to begin. It was intolerable for him to see friends and relatives so ambitiously bloodthirsty to kill each other. At that state, his friendly relationship with Krishna was put aside. He needed Krishna to be his guru, Jagat Guru. Karpanyado so pahata swabhava prichami tvam dharma samudacheha, everyone. Yatrayaschan drishtit shishyastiham sadimam tvam papanam. I have lost all composure due to weakness. I am surrendering to you. Please instruct me. Krishna smiled and then began the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada explains in this purport from Srimad Bhagavatam we are reading today that actually Arjuna was a liberated soul. He was a dear friend of the Lord. By Krishna's yoga maya potency, he put Arjuna in this bewildered state on behalf of all human society for all time to come. Because everyone within this material existence is in a bewildered state. Arjuna is representing you and me. And Krishna is speaking through Arjuna to you and me. In this beautiful translation that we have read from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Arjuna is explaining that Krishna's words on the battlefield of Kurukshetra are words that are absolutely relevant for everyone in all times, in all places, in all circumstances. The Bhagavad Gita primarily deals with five factors. The first one is Ishwara, the Supreme Lord. A Jiva, the living entity. Prakriti, material nature. Kala, time and space. And karma, action. Of the five, four of them are eternal. The Supreme Lord, the living entity, material nature, and time. Krishna explains in great detail, very succinctly, these five principles. The Supreme Lord, Krishna declares in Gita, to be himself. Not only does he declare it, but Arjuna recognizes Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Itamuttamam. You are the Supreme Brahman. You are the Supreme Purifier. You are the Supreme Abode. You are the Supreme Shelter. This is not only my opinion. Ahustvam Rishayar Sarave. That all the great souls, all the great scholars, and all the self-realized rishis, they all declare this of you. Asita, Devala, Vyas. And Krishna himself manifested in the 11th chapter of Gita his universal form. Just to show practically his supreme position.
And he reveals the truth. Matta parataram nanyat kinchit asti taranjayat mai saravam itam protam sutre manikna iva.
Krishna declares in Gita, there is no truth superior to me. Everything is resting on me as pearls are strung on a thread.
Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartite. Iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samandita.
I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my loving service and worship me with all their hearts.
Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharachara.
I am the controller of this entire material nature. It's all working under my direction.
So yes, again and again, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Lord declares his supreme position is Ishwara.
And he describes the tattva of the living entity.
Najayate mriyate vakata chinnayan bhuto bhavata vanabhuya. Ajonyate shashvato yan purano. Nahanyate hanyamane sarire.
Arjuna, the life force is the spirit soul. What animates this body is the soul.
And what is the nature of the soul?
It has no birth. It has no death.
It is not slain when the body is slain.
It cannot be cut into pieces by weapons. It cannot be burnt by fire. It cannot be moistened by water.
Dehinosmin yata dehe komaram yovaram jara tata dehantara praptya dhirastatra namuyate.
And it is the spirit soul that is the source of consciousness. Through babyhood, childhood, adulthood, old age, and ultimately at the time of death,
vasamsa jinani yathavihaya,
the soul changes into another body the same way when clothes become worn out or unwearable, we cast away old clothes and accept a new garment.
That is the nature of the soul.
You are not this body. You are the eternal soul.
Mamaivam so jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana.
Manashashtanindriyani prakritishtani karashati. And Krishna describes the eternal qualitative nature of the soul. That it is part and parcel of me. He doesn't say part and parcel of material nature. He doesn't say part and parcel of spiritual nature. Mamaivam so jivaloko. Every living entity is part and parcel of me. Everything is emanating from me. So the relationship between Ishwara and Jiva is the foundational subject matter of Bhagavad Gita.
Upanishads describe nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam eko bahunam vidadot
excuse me that there is one supreme eternal or God, and there are unlimited eternal beings who are all eternally subordinate to the one supreme.
Krishna tells Arjuna that
I have spoken this knowledge to you in the past. You have forgotten. but I haven't.
Vedaham samatitani varatamana nichajana babashani chabutani mamtu vedanakashchana.
The living entity, the jiva, has the tendency to forget. But Ishwara never forgets. God never forgets. God can never come under the control of his own energies.
Therefore, he is supreme, the controller of all controllers.
And he could, and by the one of the primary energies of the Lord is the material energy,
which is all acting within the Lord's creation called the Mahatattva. It is called nature. Nature is inert matter that is being very much activated by the three modes. And Krishna describes this in great detail in Bhagavad Gita. The sattva-guna, raja-guna, and tamaguna. These three modes are activating everything within creation. These three gunas are like ropes. When the living entity forgets his eternal identity and identifies with material existence, then he is bound by these ropes of material nature. Krishna tells, Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani saravasha ahankara vimudhatma karataham iti manyate. That the bewildered soul thinks himself to be the doer of activities, but he's not. They're simply being carried out by nature, simply being dragged by Maya with the ropes of these three modes. And due to the influence of these modes of material nature, the living entity engages in activities that put him in, or her in the most embarrassing situations. The mode of passion impels lust, greed, anger. The mode of ignorance, intensified anger, intoxication, cruelty, violence, untruthfulness. What a despicable situation this material existence is when the living entity identifies with it. The soul is Satchidananda. It's part of God. It's pure. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Parastasma tu bhavanyo vyakto vyaktat sanatana. Beyond this material creation is the spiritual world where there's no need for a sun or a moon. Everything is self-illuminated. That is our eternal home. What are we doing here? A place of death. A place of suffering. Why? Because we're just bound by these ropes. Instead of longing an ecstatic separation for Krishna, we're lusty to rub our bodies against some object, infatuated by lust. Isn't that a disgusting condition for the soul? I mean, Bollywood makes it something very glamorous and wonderful, but if we see it from the point of view of Bhagavad Gita, it's horrible. Here's the spirit soul, pure, eternal, who has an eternal relationship with Krishna, who should be infatuated in the internal ecstasy of just diving into the ocean of remembrance of the all-attractive glories of Krishna. And instead, what is our mind? It's just being practically tortured and controlled and obsessed with lust, which is what? Some body of mucus, bile, air, and all kinds of other stuff
that we're just temporarily imprisoned within. And we're so obsessed with just rubbing this body against something. And we're thinking that's the ultimate pleasure in life. Everything is the property of Krishna. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. But we're so much under the illusion that I am this body. We want to be the proprietor of Krishna's property. And we become filled with greed. Modes of passion and ignorance cause greed. And when lust and greed are unfulfilled, we become angry. We lose control. We do abominable things. We say things we regret sometimes for the rest of our lives. This has nothing to do with us. We're slaves. You can have freedom. You can have your Independence Day. But it's Independence Day in a society of slaves. We're all just being manipulated and exploited by the three modes of material nature. Only for one reason, because we choose to do so. Yes, Krishna tells us. That this Mamupetya Punara Janma, Dukalayam Ashashvatam, Napnavanti Mahatmana Samsidim Paramam Gata. That great personalities, they make their destination my abode, not this world, which is a place of misery due to so much suffering. Janma mritya jara vyadi dukkha doshana darshanam. It is essentially a miserable place because no matter what other arrangements you make, birth, old age, disease, and death are inevitable. The spirit soul, part of God, due to these modes of nature, can become a murderer, a terrorist, obsessed with greed and lust, anger and pride. That is the power. And then Krishna describes time and space. When he revealed the universal form to Arjuna saw everyone being devoured by his mouths, which appear to be all-pervading. Krishna said, this is my form of time, devouring everything. Time is eternal, because time is Krishna, and Krishna is eternal. Material nature is eternal. But the manifestations within material nature are coming and going. Why? By the influence of time. Everything created within this material nature is under the supreme authority and control of time. And no one can escape by any material endeavor. Where are all the great persons of history? They're dead and gone. Alexander the Great. But what's so great about him? Where is he now? He's dead. The little insects are dead. Napoleon is dead. Everyone who takes birth has to meet death. Why? Wealthiest people in the world, they can control so much, but they can't control time. Even multi-billionaires, they can cover the cracks on their face with all kinds of surgical operations and expensive cosmetics, but they can't stop the process of aging for even 1 second.
Hare Krishna.
And fruit of activities. Krishna explains in great detail how every action on the material plane is influenced by either the mode of ignorance, passion, or goodness. But what is the purpose of the Gita? Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nistrigunya Bhavarjuna Nirdvanvo Niryaka. What is it? Near you. The Vedas mainly deal with the three modes of material nature. But rise above these modes, Arjuna. Be unattached to all attractions and aversion and be transcendental. That is what Gita teaches. Now, Gita is basically divided into three sections. Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. But the way Krishna explains it is these are all yogas in connection to Him. What is Karma Yoga? Now, if someone takes Krishna out of the equation, it becomes karma. If they take Krishna out of the equation, it becomes jnana. If they take Krishna out of the equation, then it becomes bhakti, but a different type of bhakti. And so many people are teaching it in this way. Krishna's teaching these three paths, karma, jnana, and bhakti. But that's not the way Krishna teaches. People say, karma nyevate karaste, that in this beautiful, famous verse, you have a right to perform your duty, but you have no right to the results of your duty. You should be detached. You should not consider yourself to be the proprietor of the results of your activities, and you should not be attached to not performing your duty. So for many people, this means work is worship. After all, at the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita, what does Arjuna do? He says, yes, Krishna, I'm going to do my duty. I'm going to fight. So that's the conclusion of Gita. That you just do your work. And you do it honestly. You do your work without attachment to the results. But what else does Krishna say about work? Yagyaratat kamanon yatra loko mam karma bandara taratam karma konteya mukta sanga samachara. Work done as a sacrifice, as an offering to Vishnu, must be performed. Otherwise, any work you do is a cause of bondage. That's Bhagavad Gita as it is. Yat karoshi yad ashnasi, yaj johoshi tadasiyat, yat tapasyasi kondiyat, tat karushu madharapanam. All that you eat, all that you do, all that you offer and give away should be done as an offering for me. So when our work is done in a spirit of servitude to Krishna, then it is transformed from karma into karma yoga. In the sixth chapter of Gita, Krishna describes the Astanga Yoga system. And he tells Arjuna, in all cases, be a yogi. And then he concludes the sixth chapter. Yogi namapi sarvesham madgate nantaratmana sharavan bhajate yomam samayukta tamamata. And of all yogis, Arjuna, you should be yogi, but of all yogis, one who abides in me with great faith and worships me, that person is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. Krishna says, me. He doesn't say anyone else or anything else. Is most intimately united with me in yoga. And then there is the path of jnana. Krishna describes very, very scrutinizingly the process of Sankhya Yoga. He describes analytically how this material nature is working, the nature of the soul. What is the difference between the temporary and the internal? So the jnana, if you take Krishna as not the goal of jnana, then it becomes jnana. But if you read Bhagavad Gita as it is, you realize what is jnana yoga. Krishna tells, Bahunam janmanamante jnanavam mam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sadurlaba. Who is a Mahatma? Who is a great soul? After many, many, many births in this world, when one finally comes to the platform of perfecting jnana or knowledge, one surrenders to Vasudev, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. That's the culmination of jnana. And Krishna reveals, Bhaktya Twananiya Shakya Aham Evam Vidurjuna Gyatam Trastam Chatatvaina Praveshtam Chaparantapa. That it is only through bhakti that I can be understood as I am, standing here before you. Bhaktya Mama Bijanati Yavanyaschasmi Tatvata. It is through devotional service, through bhakti, that I can be understood as I am, that I could be known. And it is only through bhakti that you can enter into the spiritual world. Sa evayam maya yoga. What is it? Sa evayam maya tedya yoga proktu puratana. Bhakto si meshaka cheti rahasyam hetat uttamam. Krishna tells Arjuna that you can understand the inner mystery of what I'm speaking, because you are my bhakta. Bhakto si me shaka cheti. You are my friend and my devotee. Otherwise, no one can enter the mysteries of the understanding of Bhagavad Gita. Man manabhava mad bhakto madhya chimna namaskuru. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me. In this way you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my friend. Antakali chamam evas manat makva kalevaram. One who at the time of death remembers me, attains me without fail, without doubt. And the culmination of Gita, Sarva Dharman Purityajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Moksha Ishami Masucha. Abandon all varieties of dharma and just surrender to me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. So yes, we see that scholars of various temperaments have given their commentaries on Bhagavad Gita. And many say, like this, that it's teaching three schools of yoga. It's teaching karma for the working people. It's teaching jnana for the intellectuals and the ascetics. And it's teaching bhakti for the people who are more sentimental. Isn't that what many people say? And that's what it appears to say if you just take aham and mam out of the equation, which is Krishna. Because Krishna is teaching karma. But what is the perfection of karma? What makes it karma yoga is when all of your actions are offered to me. What makes it jnana yoga is when the culmination of all your jnana is to understand me.
And what do you do when you understand me? You surrender. And what makes it bhakti? Janma karma cha medivyam evam yoveti tatva tatyaktva deham punara janma naiti mameti sorjuna. One who understands, that's knowledge, the transcendental nature of my appearance and my activities, never takes birth in this material world, but attains my abode. Krishna's eternal. Krishna's an eternal person. Avajananti mamuta manusim tanamashritam param bhavam ajananto mamabhuta maheshwaram. The mudhas, they don't understand that my form is transcendental. I have supreme dominion over all that be. They are thinking either that I'm an ordinary person or I'm the divine who has taken an ordinary, within the realm of material nature, I've taken this form. But that is not acceptable according to Krishna's version of Gita. If you just understand the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities, that means Krishna's appearance and activities have nothing to do with material nature. Transcendental means they're not in the mode of goodness. They're not in the mode of passion. They're not in the mode of ignorance. They're divyam. Krishna does not come down to live in the mode of goodness. It's not the supreme impersonal Brahman takes the form of goodness in this world. Krishna rejects that. Janma karma cha me divyam. My birth is divine. My activities are eternal and divine. And one who understands them goes to my abode. That is Krishna. So what is the ultimate conclusion of Gita? Arjuna, he accepted everything Krishna did and surrendered to him with love and devotion. And to understand Gita properly, we must follow in the footsteps of Arjuna. Yes, for all types of people, with all types of ideas and ideologies, there's no superior book for them to explain everything than Bhagavad Gita. It's a fact. People are explaining it from karma. People are explaining it from yoga. People are explaining it from jnana. People are explaining it from bhakti. People are explaining it from business. It's the best book to learn how to do business properly. People are explaining it and understanding it from the point of view of politics. It's the ultimate book to learn politics. Any way you take the Gita, it explains anything. But that's just taking the unbelievable ambrosial nectarine brilliant words of God and trying to apply them to something else. But if we want to get the actual benefit of Bhagavad Gita, the real benefit that Krishna came to give us, we must understand it as it is. Man mana bhava mad bhakto madhyam chi mam namaskuru mam evaishashi satyam te pratijani priyoshime. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me. Mach chita mad kata prana bodhyanta parasparam katyantascha mam nityam tushyamant tiranti ramanti cha. That the thoughts of my devotees always dwell in me. And they derive great satisfaction and bliss discussing topics of me amongst each other. Mahatmanastu mam parata daivim praktitimashyata bhajantyananya manasho gyatva bhuta dimabhyayam.
Krishna says, who is Mahatma? Anybody can say Mahatma. Anyone could rubber stamp Mahatma. But from God's version, who is the Mahatma?
Says a Mahatma, a great soul, is always under the protection of my divine energy. And they are always worshiping me with all their hearts, knowing me to be the absolute truth.
Krishna says that is Mahatma. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha dritavrata namashyantascha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upashate. And such a Mahatma is always chanting my glories, always performing kirtan, and always bowing down before me.
Bhagavad Gita is teaching us scientifically, logically, and with tremendous compassion the means by which we could all find the shelter of the all-attractive, all-loving, Supreme Personality of Godhead in any situation in life.
And herein we find Arjuna, many, many years after Gita was spoken. This was even a bigger crisis than he was in Kurukshetra. It is human nature that in crises we really turn to God. Yes? Arjuna was a friend of Krishna. He was turning to God in every situation. But in crisis, he really turned to Krishna. In Kurukshetra, we describe the crisis he was in. But that was insignificant compared to the crisis we're reading about today in Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna left the world. Will Arjuna ever see him again? Not only did he leave the world, but Krishna withdrew all Arjuna's potencies. So he was not even an ordinary man. That is Krishna power. He gave Arjuna the power to defeat the entire Kuru army. And now, a band of infidel cowherd men have defeated Arjuna and stolen Krishna's princesses. How is that possible? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes from the Vishnu Purana that actually Krishna knows how to do everything so perfectly. Krishna incarnated as those infidel cowherd men. Arjuna didn't recognize him. Unless Krishna reveals himself, you can't see him. Even if you're the greatest devotee, even if you're a Paramhamsa, even if you're on the level of Arjuna, still, you can't recognize Krishna unless Krishna willingly reveals himself to you. What does that mean? We're always subordinate to Krishna. We're always dependent on the mercy of Krishna. Even in our most perfect, pure, liberated state, we're always depending on the mercy and the love of Krishna. So yes, here is this totally purified Paramahamsa Arjuna who's being attacked by just some village guys. Not in chariots with royal armor and astras like Dronacharya, but they just had, you know, simple clubs and sticks. And Arjuna, my ladies, do not worry. I have my mighty Gandiba. He couldn't injure a single one of them. They beat him up. They beat up Arjuna. He lost. And he was trying with all his mights to protect Krishna's princesses, but they took him away. Unbelievable. How is that possible? Nobody could have touched those sacred devotees of Krishna.
Krishna himself took them away. But Arjuna considered himself defeated. To accept defeat by the Almighty Supreme Absolute Truth is the perfection of our lives. We don't want to compete with God. We want to serve God. We want to surrender to God. And Srimad Bhagavatam begins where Bhagavad Gita takes off, where those who surrender to Krishna with love, Krishna is defeated by that love. He's Bhakta Vatsal. By the love of Arjuna, Krishna was his servant, driving his chariot. By the love of Yudhisthira, Krishna was his courier. He was his messenger, going back and forth, sending messages. By the power of Bhima's love, Krishna was giving him food to eat. How is that possible? By the power of the gopis' love, Krishna was like a dancing puppet. They would say, "Dance, Gopal, dance," and he would dance just for their pleasure. And they would laugh. Yes. This is the power of bhakti. And bhakti in its most developed state is bhava and then prema. Prema bhakti. Pure, unadulterated love and devotion. Brahmabhuta prasanatma na sochati na kankshati. Krishna says, one who attains that Brahman level of pure consciousness doesn't hanker and lament for anything. What do? They engage in my devotional service. This is Bhagavad Gita. So yes, this is the condensed essence, the supreme message that has been extracted from all the Vedic literatures. The Vedas are like a cow. And it has the milking, the essence of the cow is the milk, which is the Bhagavad Gita. The very essence. And what is the essence of all essence? To surrender to Krishna. Sarva dharman puritya shal mam ekam sharanam. So although it's so clear, it's on practically every page. Evam parampara praptam. It is Krishna's own will that unless we hear it from a representative of Arjuna, bhakto sime shaka chete, a friend and a devotee of Krishna in parampara, we will not understand it as it is. We can get immense benefits from in so many ways from Bhagavad Gita. But the real treasure Krishna has come to give us is pure love of God. And Srila Prabhupada, when he was in New York City, one American lady asked him if he could recommend an edition of Gita to study. And Prabhupada, with all humility and honesty, he said, all the editions that I have seen, the commentators are giving their own opinion. But what is Krishna's opinion? It's clearly written on every page. There's no truth superior to me. I am the source of everything. Always remember me. I am the controller of nature. Daivihyeshu gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. This material nature is very difficult to overcome. But if one surrenders to me, one can easily cross beyond it. So Prabhupada, out of his love, out of his compassion, has given us Bhagavad Gita as it is. And through this one edition, in which tens of millions of copies have been distributed in almost every major language of the world. People's lives and hearts have been transformed. And Srila Prabhupada explained the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. It's to give an association of people who actually are genuinely and honestly living by the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. Because without that type of association, without proper spiritual masters and senior devotees to guide us, then it's very difficult to even follow Bhagavad Gita as it is. Because Krishna tells, Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. We need spiritual masters. Diksha gurus, shiksha gurus. Association is so very, very important. So this, in essence, is the purpose of our temple and a purpose of all of our communities. Just to put into life the teachings of Gita. And Gita is so practical. It is so dynamic. It's a culture of pure spiritual consciousness that can be practiced practically 24 hours a day by everyone if we're simply sincere. It could be practiced in our workplace. It could be practiced in our home. It could be practiced with our friends. It could be practiced alone. It could be practiced whether we were a military man or a politician or a lawyer or a doctor or a businessman or a farmer or an architect. It could be practiced whether you're a renunciate or a householder. It could be practiced even if you're a student. Bhagavad Gita is so wonderful. You don't have to go to the Himalayan caves and just perform tapasya. You can achieve the ultimate perfection of life living in Bombay, performing your occupational duty, taking care of your family, or sleeping on the floor in the brahmachari ashram. Whatever your prescribed duty, whatever your ashram may be, if you just do it in a spirit of devotion to Krishna, you can perfect your life. So on this day of Gita Jayanti, the appearance of Sri Bhagavad Gita, let us offer our respectful obeisances to Srila Prabhupada, who made the true teachings of Gita so accessible to all of us and gave us a society of people that makes the practice of Bhagavad Gita the most blissful way of life, the most meaningful and fulfilling way of living. And let us offer our obeisances and our lives in the loving service of Krishna and Arjuna. Yatra yogeshwaro krishno, yatra partha dunurdana, tatra srir vijayo bhutir, dhruvanitir matir mama. This is Sanjay's conclusion. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all yogis, and wherever there is that great archer, Arjuna, there is certain to be victory, morality, opulence, all success. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach us how we can always remember Krishna, always keep Krishna in our heart of hearts, in all circumstances, which is the very essence and conclusion of the Gita, and thus overcome all obstacles and attain the ultimate destination.
Krishna has descended in this age of Kali in his holy name. Therefore, it is the prime benediction for all humanity. This Nam Sankirtan is the very practical fulfillment of all the teachings of the Gita, if it is done properly. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Thank you very much. Yadubar Prabhu, would you like to please speak something?
I just remember when I first read Bhagavad Gita, first came in contact with Bhagavad Gita after meeting the devotees on my photographic assignment. I was coming to India. I had the blue cover copy of Bhagavad Gita by Macmillan, the first Macmillan Gita. And I was reading that as I was on the airplane. First time I really read it with any concentration. And I had the profound realization that I knew absolutely nothing in my life. That my knowledge was nil. Because of course in the schools and colleges we don't get any spiritual knowledge. It is only material knowledge year after year after year. So at age 24, when I was introduced to Bhagavad Gita, after going through 12 years of regular school and 4 years of university, I could not connect with very much of anything. So first of all, I realized I didn't understand anything, real knowledge, and also I understood that I didn't have very much access to Bhagavad Gita, the knowledge in Bhagavad Gita. But still, I treasured that book. And then after meeting the devotees for the first time, well, for the second time or third time in Surat with Srila Prabhupada, I could actually see what wonderful effect spiritual knowledge has, especially with Srila Prabhupada, who was fully self-realized. His every action was perfection. So we are all very grateful to have this knowledge, and where would we be without it? In our lives especially, we can say we don't know what horrible condition we would be in. In India, it's a little bit different because you're surrounded by Krishna in one sense. But in the West, so many people succumb to so many horrible ends. And as Maharaj was saying the other day, so many old people, the other night actually, so many old people just wither away. They have no meaning in their lives. They simply live out their life full of emptiness. So it is a very sad situation. But of course there is hope in the spreading of Krishna consciousness. That is our great hope. So thank you all for taking to Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada will be very, very, very happy to see this wonderful phenomenon. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much. At this time, let us celebrate the appearance of Bhagavad Gita as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught us through Sri Nam Sankirtan.